The Institute for Afterlife Research presents What Happens When We Die by Mike Pettigrew. In 1977, my cousin died in a road accident. Although I was only 15 years old at the time, this turned out to be one of the most important events of my life. My cousin's death started me on a quest that continues to this day. His death at the age of 19 prompted me to ask questions like, who am I and what really happens when I die? Although we were very close, I remember the day of his funeral as being one of celebration. I honestly could not understand these feelings at the time, and I wondered why everything felt so bright and exciting at what should have been such a tragic and painful time. I now know that what I felt on that day was an intuitive understanding that life is eternal, and that the feelings of celebration were perhaps a sense of what my cousin was actually experiencing at that moment, even though he had only just died. Today, I also feel that learning about death and what happens during and after our death is of extreme importance to every living person. Discovering and examining the abundant evidence for the eternity of life can have a huge impact on how we live our day-to-day life and what we strive for during our lives. Overcoming our fears of death will also enable us to draw immense power into our daily existence, and everything we do can therefore take on a greater vigor and dynamism. The near-death experience. Shortly after Peter's death, my aunt and uncle were given a book that helped them greatly at this tragic time. The name of this book was Life After Life by Dr. Raymond Moody. This book, which had only recently been published, related the many experiences of people who had died for a number of minutes and then returned to life. The remarkable thing about these experiences was the fact that so many people had experienced the same or very similar things during the period that they were clinically dead. This remarkable book from an exceptional author was really a first of its kind. Prior to this book being published, almost no one had heard about the near-death experience. Any person having had such an experience before the publication of this book would usually keep silent about their profound and life-altering experiences. This was because such an experience was unheard of, and if anyone was to relate what happened during the period that they were clinically dead, there was a very good chance that they might be shunted off to the nearest psychiatrist or psychiatric ward. The emotional impact of these experiences is profound. A person having had a near-death experience in virtually every instance no longer has any fear of death. As soon as my aunt and uncle had finished this book, they lent the book to me. All I can say is Life After Life has had a profound effect on every aspect of my own life, and was without doubt the starting point for everything that I have done since reading this remarkable book. So what exactly happens when we die? Is this the end? If it is not, then is there any way we can explore what happens to us as we take the transition from this life into the next? In order to answer these questions, I will need to take you on a journey to many different places and visit many different people who will each be able to offer clues to these very important questions. In Raymond Moody's research, he discovered that at the point of physical death, the individual finds themselves floating above their physical body, immersed in feelings of total peace and the absence of fear. They may hear the attending doctor telling his staff that the patient is now dead and that there is nothing more that they can do. The newly deceased person quickly finds that they can hear the thoughts of the attending doctors and nurses and realize that they can actually move through walls and visit any parts of the hospital. At some point in this experience, a tunnel appears to which they are drawn. They find themselves quickly moving through this tunnel, often accompanied by sounds like chimes or music, or in some cases a humming sensation. Their journey through this tunnel is usually quite rapid, and at a certain point in the journey, they notice that a light is getting closer to them as they get towards the end of the tunnel. Before long, they find themselves coming into a brilliant light. Once they have arrived in this light, the person who has just died usually meets beings of light. These beings of light glow with a beautiful and intense luminescence that seems to permeate everything and fills the person with love. They also describe this light as being brighter than anything we can experience here on earth, but it does not hurt the eyes. At this point, many people report meeting with friends and relatives who have already died. They often report that their own body and that of their friends and relatives who have already died appear to be identical. Occasionally, people even see some beautiful cities of light that are beyond anything we can imagine. In this new state of being, the individual finds that he can communicate with others telepathically. That results in complete and immediate understanding. At this point, the individual usually meets a radiant being. Some may describe it as God, while others may often describe him as Jesus, Mohammed, Buddha, Krishna, depending on the religious beliefs of the individual. Whoever this being is, he or she radiates a total love and understanding. It is usually at this point that the being tells the person who has recently died that they must return to physical life. However, before the person returns to physical life, they are shown what's become known as a life review. This life review starts at the person's birth and goes on to the point at which they died. It usually takes place in a third-person perspective and does not occur in normal time as we know it. Some people have described this as everything happening at the same time, yet also happening chronologically, from the time of birth through life's early years and later adult years right up to the point of death. The incredible thing about this panoramic life review, as it's become known, is that the individual finds themselves reliving absolutely everything that they have done during their lifetime. In this panoramic life review, the individual not only sees every action that they have done, but also they perceive and feel the effects of their actions upon the lives of others. In other words, this life review enables a person to feel the effects of their unloving actions on others, as well as feeling the effects of their compassionate actions towards others. Although this being of light does not judge them, the individual finds that they are actually judging themselves and what they have done with their lives. The individual gets to feel great remorse for the actions they have made that have hurt people, while they get to feel great joy for the actions they have given towards others' happiness. When this life review is completed, the being of light reminds them that they must return to physical life. At this point, most people feel great reluctance to return, as this will mean that they will have to leave this wonderful place that is full of love and joy and beauty. The being usually tells the individual that their time on earth is not complete and that they have things to do and achieve before they can return to this beautiful place. However, in some rare cases, the individual themselves will ask to return to physical life in order to complete something that they want to complete, or maybe help raise children that are still young. In these cases, the being of light may have already told them that it was actually their time to die. People who go through this near-death experience always say that time in this state of existence is either greatly compressed or does not exist at all. Some people say that the experience could have lasted a second or even 10,000 years. It wouldn't make any difference how you put it. Now, an amazing statistic. In 1982, the Gallup polling organization in the United States found that 8 million adult Americans had already had the near-death experience. This amounts to about one person in 20, and is a very large number of people indeed. However, most people do not talk freely about their experience for fear of ridicule. Fortunately, this is happening less and less as more people read about and learn about the near-death experience. The Near-Death Experience of Danyon Brinkley. I've had the great fortune to have got to know a remarkable man by the name of Danyon Brinkley, who had a near-death experience that lasted 28 minutes. Now, this is the longest clinically documented near-death experience ever recorded, and his experiences during these 28 minutes of death are related in great detail in his wonderful book entitled Saved by the Light. And this book, which is a bestseller, is a really great inspiration for all readers. Danyon Brinkley was born and raised in rural South Carolina. At school he was a bully and inflicted great suffering on his schoolmates. He was always picking fights and was known actually as the most violent person in his small town. Later in his teens, he joined the Marines, the Marine Corps, and as he said himself, he had now had a wonderful way of channeling his anger and violence into becoming a killing machine. Danyon was so good at what he did that he was recruited into an intelligence unit, and he became a government assassin. Danyon's main job was to plan and execute the removal of enemy politicians and military personnel. And there were many instances where he killed people in cold blood. And he says that he actually even enjoyed his job at that time. And he was, as the listener can imagine, a very bad guy. During his near-death experience, Danyon underwent almost all of the classic near-death experiences. He found himself floating above his body as he followed the ambulance to the hospital. But Danyon was dead on arrival. The doctors tried all they could, but they were unable to resuscitate him. While floating above his body in the ambulance, Danyon noticed a tunnel or a vortex was forming, opening like the eye of a hurricane and coming towards him. He thought that would be a very interesting place to be, and he went off to investigate, and off he went through the tunnel as it came towards him. As the tunnel spiraled around him, there was the sound of seven chimes ringing in rhythmic succession. As he rushed through the darkness, he noticed a light ahead of him, towards which he rushed very quickly. The light became brighter and brighter until he found himself standing in a paradise of brilliant light. This was the brightest light that he had ever seen, but in spite of that, it did not hurt his eyes in the least. As he looked to his right, he could see a silver form appearing like a silhouette through mist. As this being approached him, he began to feel a deep sense of love radiating towards him from the being. As the being started to come closer, these feelings of love intensified greatly until it was almost too pleasurable to withstand. He then looked at his hand and noticed it was translucent and shimmering with light. As he looked down his body, it was also constructed in the same manner. He began to look around and noticed that below him were other beings that looked similar to him. However, these beings appeared to be lost and shimmered at a rate much less than his. As he focused on these beings, he noticed that his own rate of vibration slowed down until he felt very uncomfortable. He knew intuitively that these beings seemed to be lost. He then looked above him and saw brighter and more radiant beings than he. As he looked at these beings, he began to vibrate faster and faster, and he felt as though one would after drinking too much coffee. As he looked away from these beings towards the being of light that was accompanying him, his rate of vibration normalized again. The being of light then engulfed him. As it did so, he began to re-experience all that had occurred to him during his life, feeling and seeing everything that had ever occurred to him. He describes it as though a dam had burst in his mind and every memory stored in his mind flowed out. Danyon's life review, of course, was not at all pleasant. From the moment it began until it ended, he was faced with the reality that he had been a very unpleasant person. He was someone who was self-centered and mean. As he watched his early childhood years, he had to experience the pain he had caused to others through his violence and humiliation. As the life review continued, Danyon then had to experience the confusion and suffering of the people who he had killed while an assassin. He had to experience the death and confusion of the people he had killed as they died. He then had to feel the suffering of the wife and children of these individuals, and also felt the repercussions of this person's death in every direction imaginable. Although Danyon's life review was very unpleasant and caused him to realize what an unpleasant person he had been, there were also parts of the life review where he was able to feel great joy. These were the events where he had given love to others or had helped them in some meaningful way. Danyon is very clear that during this life review, nobody judged him. The person who will judge us most harshly is always oneself. After the review was over, He arrived at the point of reflection, and he was undoubtedly ashamed. He realized he'd led a very, very selfish life, rarely reaching out to help anyone. As he looked at the being of light, he felt a deep sense of sorrow and shame. But the being conveyed to him telepathically these words: "Who you are is the difference that God makes, and that difference is love." As the being moved away, he felt the burden of his guilt being completely removed. He also heard the being say telepathically, "Humans are powerful spiritual beings, meant to create good on the earth. This good isn't usually accomplished in bold actions, but in singular acts of kindness between people. It's the little things that count, because they are more spontaneous and show who you truly are." Danyan then assured the being of light that his life would be much better now that he had this wonderful secret. However, it was only at this point that he realized that he would not be going back, that his life was over. He had been struck by lightning and was now dead. It was too late to have been given such a wonderful secret to life. Danyan says that the being of light was full of forgiveness. There was no harsh judgment. The being of light was rather a friendly counsel as he was bathed in the love that embraced him. Danyan then started to move upwards with the being. He could feel a hum as his body began to vibrate at a higher rate of speed, until the point where he could perceive beautiful mountains as though shrouded in mist. On the mountainside were lights, and as he drew closer, he realized he was entering a city filled with light. They arrived in the city that appeared to be composed of cathedrals, or beautiful majestic buildings composed of crystals, which radiated feelings of awe and majesty and power. Danyan says that the walls of these cathedrals were made of large glass bricks that glowed from within. These structures, these cathedrals, were not related to any specific religion of any kind. He sensed a power that seemed to pulsate throughout everything. As he moved into one of these cathedrals, he realized it was actually a place of learning, and he realized that he was in this place to be instructed in some way. In this cathedral, there were rows of seats. Sitting alone in this glorious place made him feel rather uncomfortable. He could not see anyone else, yet he had the strong feelings that the benches were actually filled with people just like him. The place reminded him of a magnificent lecture hall. In front of him, he could actually see a long podium which glowed like white quartz. And the wall behind this podium was a spectacular carousel of colors. The next moment, the space behind the podium was filled with beings of light. Danyan says that there were actually 13 of these beings, and each one of them represented a different emotional and psychological characteristic that all humans have. One was bold and energetic, while another was passive and loyal. Each one of them seemed to represent a sign of the zodiac, and the 13th being seemed to preside over the other 12. Each of these beings of light approached Danyan in succession with what looked like a box. This box seemed to open up to reveal what looked like a small TV screen. Each time this happened, a scene would appear on the small screen that would grow in size until Danyan actually found himself inside the scene. And these scenes were major world events that would take place in the future. There were 117 major world events that Danyan was shown that would take place in the future between 1975, when he was struck by lightning, and 2012. These events included the nuclear accident at Chernobyl, as well as the breakup of the former Soviet Union, the Gulf War, presidents of the United States, changes to our Earth's climate, breakthroughs in technology, and many, many other things. At this point of time, in 2002, more than 100 of these very specific global events have now occurred. Danyan was also instructed to build what he calls centers. These centers would be comprised of 7 rooms, and the purpose of these centers would be to enable people to touch their own spiritual essence. They would be a place where people could come to reduce the stress in their lives, and through this reduction of stress, people could come to realize that they themselves are higher spiritual beings. The seven rooms, each a step in the process, were as follows. A therapy room, in which people could come together and talk to each other. A massage clinic, where people are not only massaged, but they also massage others. A sensory deprivation chamber, which is a kind of chamber that will allow people to relax and go very deeply within themselves. A room equipped with biofeedback machines that lets people see the extent to which they can control their emotions. An area for readings that allows those with psychic abilities to provide patients with personal insights. A room with a bed whose musical components relax a person so deeply that they can actually leave their body. A reflection chamber, made of polished steel or copper on the inside and shaped in such a way that the person inside cannot see their own reflection. A point arrived in Danyan's experience where he was told he must return to physical life. He was given no option, and as he says, he went back kicking, scratching and screaming. He really didn't want to return to physical life. Anyway, he arrived back in the hospital to find his dead body covered by a sheet, and his body was just about to be taken off to the morgue as he had been pronounced dead and his death certificate had already been written. The next thing, he found himself back in his cold, dead body, and he describes how his body felt like it was suddenly on fire or he had been bathed in battery acid. The pain was excruciating, but he was able to barely blow on the sheet that was covering him. The orderlies suddenly realized that he was actually alive because they saw the sheet being blown. He was rushed into the emergency room once again and his very slow recuperation began. Danyan was paralyzed for some time and his life was understandably, irreversibly changed. He was in great pain for a great deal of time. He also had to relearn to use every muscle in his body once again. Now, some very unusual abilities started to surface for Danyan during his recuperation. He noticed quite quickly how he was able to read the minds of others and see things that would happen in the future. Since 1975, Danyan Brinkley has done some incredible things for the world. He has set up an organization in the United States called Compassion in Action, which is an organization that recruits, trains, and supports hospice volunteers. Danyan is responsible for recruiting more hospice volunteers in the United States than any person alive to this day. He has spent thousands of hours by the bedside of those who are dying and has helped remove the fear of death from millions who have read his books. His second book, At Peace in the Light, describes his experiences and insights in helping the dying and is an invaluable resource and handbook for those who work as hospice volunteers. Not only have Danyan's major world predictions come true with astounding accuracy, but he has also already set up a number of his centres. He is known as one of the greatest psychics living in the world at this time. I have mentioned the experiences of Danyan Brinkley because he was dead longer than anyone in recorded history and because of the real-world verification of the reality of these experiences through his predictions being fulfilled. So what happens if you stay dead and don't come back? All the experiences of people who have died and come back to life after a few minutes really only give us clues about the preliminary stages of death. If Danyan Brinkley and others like him had decided to stay dead rather than come back to physical life, what would they have experienced further into the experience of death? What do we do there and where is there? What about things like reincarnation? Do they exist? And finally, is there any proof for all of this? These are all very important questions, and there are answers to each one of them. There are many ways to find out what happens beyond the horizon of this life, other than near-death experiences. And now we will turn our attention to these. The evidence for past lives. For some time now, there has been a phenomenon having its roots in the United States known as past life therapy. Although I feel that past life therapy may not always be beneficial for every individual, It has in fact yielded some fascinating insight into what happens far into the experience of death. In a book, Life Between Life, by Joel Whitten and Joe Fisher, we learn that it is possible to gain much information about the advanced stages of death. As the listener may be aware, a skilled hypnotherapist can often regress a subject to an early age where they can describe in great detail what happened on, say, for instance, their third birthday. Now, in normal waking consciousness, we usually find it rather difficult to remember an event that happened a long time ago, especially if it was not a major event in our lives. Modern science gives us abundant evidence that our subconscious minds record absolutely every detail of what happens to us, including many things that we don't even notice at the time. For instance, a skilled hypnotherapist regressing a person to their third birthday, it might be their third birthday party, they might ask the subject, what type of clothing was your mother wearing and how many cakes were on the plate? Now, a normal 3-year-old may not even be able to count, but such information as this can easily be gathered under hypnosis. And I believe that hypnosis has even been used to acquire additional information in criminal law cases, or to gather as much evidence as possible, or to clarify an event. Our conscious minds can only focus on a very limited number of things at any one time. However, our subconscious mind appears to absorb absolutely everything from our environment, even the things that we cannot and do not consciously notice. Therefore, our conscious mind remembers only a small number of things about an event, whereas our subconscious mind records absolutely everything that happens to us. Now, some years ago, a hypnotist was regressing a client back to an event that was troubling that person's present circumstances, and the hypnotist asked his client to go back to the time and memory where the present day problem originated. And to his amazement, this client started relating in great detail and clarity an event from a previous life that was causing the present day problem. Now, this hypnotherapist had actually stumbled on what later became known as past life therapy. And past life therapy operates under the understanding that an affliction that is taking place in this life can sometimes have its roots in a former lifetime. Now, while obviously not all ailments are attributable to a previous traumatic death, there is abundant evidence to suggest that indeed some are. There was a case, I believe, in the United States where a person suffering from a rash that suddenly appeared under stress accompanied by great difficulties in breathing was actually traced back to a former lifetime where the patient had died in a car crash, dying of burns and suffocation. Now, you know, one may think that these experiences are nothing more than guided fantasies, and that can be a real danger. However, there is strong evidence to suggest that when a person is reliving an actual event from a past life, the entire emotional impact of the event is also relived. Now, that's definitely not the case when one is experiencing a guided fantasy or a product of one's imagination. In such a case, there's very, very little emotional impact or feeling. There have also been a great many cases where a person claiming to remember a past life either as a result of a hypnotic regression or even spontaneous memories during waking consciousness has actually been able to verify many of the aspects of the experience. Now, what this actually means is that many people have checked up on their former lives through genealogical and historical records, only to discover that the person who they claim to have been in a former lifetime has actually really existed, and in the manner in which they described under hypnosis. Now, about 20 years ago, a fascinating documentary was aired on British TV entitled The Bloxton Tapes. And this documentary researched and analysed the experiences of people who regressed into past lives by an Arnold Bloxham. The film team recorded a number of sessions in which Arnold Bloxham regressed various subjects back to former lifetimes. And in some cases, a subject actually started speaking in a foreign language that was unknown to them during waking consciousness. In one fascinating case, a member of the film crew asked if she herself could be put into hypnosis to see if there was any possibility of her remembering a former lifetime. And to the amazement of everyone present, she started to remember a previous lifetime in medieval France. Not only did she give her own name and the name of the large house in which she lived, she also gave details about a secret hidden chamber in the same house about which no one else but herself and one other person from this previous lifetime had knowledge of. Now, obviously, the TV crew found this bait that was irresistible, so they went off to France to check to see if such a house really existed. And to their great surprise, the house was still standing and had actually been converted into a museum some years previously. And this film crew actually investigated the whereabouts of the secret chamber, only to discover that it was located exactly where their team member remembered under hypnosis. And this chamber was completely undiscovered before the TV crew investigated the validity of this past life memory, and the contents of the room fully matched the description given under hypnosis. Now, during many of these past life regressions, hypnotists have actually asked their subjects to describe what happened during the period after a previous death, and some very, very interesting information has evolved from these sources. It would appear that most people, when they die, they go through the preliminary experiences of death mentioned earlier from the research of Dr. Raymond Moody. However, later on in the experience of death, it would appear that there are many options available to the person who has died. Most people, however, at some stage, choose to be reborn into physical life once again in order to further their evolution and their growth. And we will look into what some of these available options may be a little bit further in this presentation. Firstly, however, let's look into some of the reasons why people decide to be reborn again into physical life. The Law of Karma. In life, there is a universal law known as the Law of Karma or Retribution. Now, this universal law tells us that everything we do in life has an effect both on ourselves and our environment. For instance, if we do something that causes another person suffering, then in all likelihood we will also suffer in a similar manner in the future, or in a way that will bring to our attention the error of our ways. This law of karma means that all our actions in thoughts, words and deeds actually mould our reality and create the circumstances of our lives. In other words, whatever causes us suffering in our lives has actually been created by our own past actions in thought, word and deed. And basically we are totally responsible for all that happens to us. Now, it is this law of karma that can enable us to grow in wisdom and understanding, and it enables us to gain balance gradually in all areas of our lives. And because life is eternal, much of the retribution we bring on ourselves may not actually be in this lifetime, but could also be in future lives. There is abundant evidence from such things as past life regressions to indicate that we attract or magnetize into our lives those people who in the past we have hurt, and also those who have hurt us. Now, it is because of the existence of this universal law of karma that we actually form links and debts to other people that we will need to balance at some point in the future. And it is because of this law of karma that we actually choose to be reborn again and again into earthly life. Basically, to make amends to those whom we have hurt and let others who have hurt us also pay back their debts. And, you know, this may actually take numerous lifetimes where we encounter one another again and again. Now, obviously, of course, we don't always come back to physical life looking the same way or behaving in exactly the same manner as we did before. There is actually plenty of evidence to suggest that we choose whatever emotional makeup we need in an incarnation before we come into incarnation in order for us to carry out what we need to achieve. However, certain deeply embedded characteristics do appear to surface again and again throughout numerous lifetimes. There have also been many cases where small children have spontaneously remembered events from a former lifetime. And this often happens where there are numerous stimuli in the child's environment that actually acts as reminders of that former lifetime. Children's memories of a past life. A beautiful book entitled The Children That Time Forgot investigates the reports from many parents around the world of their children spontaneously remembering and speaking about a previous lifetime. It would appear from the research carried out by the author of this book that most small children have memories of a former lifetime. However, by the time a child starts to interact with others outside the home, these memories of a previous lifetime can start to fade rapidly. As a child starts to learn from the society in which they live about what is accepted as real and what is fantasy, these memories disappear even more rapidly. However, there have been many instances where a small child may make an unusual comment to their parent that may not make any sense to the parent. For example, there have been cases where a small child had said something like, "When I was big, I treated my children better than the way you treat me." Now, at this point, most parents will dismiss what the child has just said as idle chatter or gobbledygook and may even completely ignore this very, very important cue entirely. However, if questioned by the parent, "What exactly do you mean when you say, 'When you were big, you never treated your children the way we treat you'," the child may actually start to relate a detailed story. The child may answer that they remember being an adult sometime in the past where they had a spouse and children. They may even describe the house where they lived, the name of the town in which they lived, and even what their name was. But the more the child speaks about their memories, the more other details and events can be recollected. And this is actually the nature of human memory. For example, if you ask me what I did yesterday at 11:30, I would actually have to think for a moment or two, and maybe even check my diary before answering you. But as I start to remember what I did yesterday at 11:30, I start to recall more details of the events. And the more details of those events I recall, the more I can actually remember the other events of the day as well. This is the nature of our memory. Memories appear to be linked together by chains of events. So when a small child starts to remember small fragments of a former lifetime, quite naturally, more memories come to the surface. There have actually been many cases of children remembering a previous lifetime quite similar to the one I've just described. And in some of these cases, the parents of the child may even check old historical and genealogical records just to prove to themselves that this was not a real memory. However, some parents have been amazed to discover that not only was the child's story completely accurate as far as history goes, but the person who they claimed to have been in that former lifetime really existed and lived their lives in the manner described by the child. One remarkable example of this took place in the United States, where a young mother gave birth to a very sick child, and the baby had a very strange birthmark, and unfortunately, the baby died after only a couple of weeks. Her older sister asked the mother if she could put a small doll in the coffin with her baby sister, but the mother, she was absolutely distraught, and she said, "No, of course you can't put the doll in the coffin with your baby sister." However, unknown to her mother, the older sister did place the very, very tiny doll under her sister's body, where it could not be seen. Now, at the funeral the next day, it was raining very heavily, and at one point during the funeral service, the young mother nearly slipped, well, she did slip, and nearly fell into the hole in the ground. Now, approximately a year later, this very same woman gave birth to another baby daughter, who, strangely enough, had exactly the same strange birthmark in the same place. And at this stage, the parents had actually moved to another part of the States, maybe 100 or so miles from their previous home. Now, when her baby daughter was about 3 years old, the family were driving with their two daughters through the same town where they used to live. And as they passed the graveyard where her baby daughter had been buried, her little daughter, who was now 3 years old, started jumping up and down excitedly on the back seat of the car, saying, "Mummy, look, look, that's the place that you put me in the ground that time when I was very sick and had to go away." Her little daughter also asked her, "Do you remember it was raining that day and you nearly fell in the hole with me?" The parents had actually never told their youngest daughter that she'd had a baby sister who had died. And the remarkable thing is that this little three-year-old had actually started asking her parents if they could dig up her coffin and to get the little doll that was there. Now, needless to say, the parents were extremely upset, but also amazed at what they were hearing. When they arrived home, the mother asked her eldest daughter if she had indeed placed the small doll in her baby sister's coffin, and it evolved that even though her mother had refused her permission, her daughter had actually placed the doll under her sister's body. The eldest daughter had also assured her mother that she'd never told her younger sister about the baby who had died, the doll, or the graveyard. So, from the experience I've just narrated, it would appear that sometimes when a small child dies, the very same child may return to the parents in the form of a later birth, which is absolutely wonderful. The purpose of physical life. There is also abundant evidence to suggest that parents, brothers, sisters, cousins, aunts and uncles, and even friends and lovers return together to earthly life again and again. However, a parent may return as his own child's son or daughter, while an uncle may become a brother in a future lifetime. It appears that due to the karmic bonds we form during life, we attract to ourselves the same people again and again. Now, these may not only be bonds where karma needs to be repaid, but can also be bonds where people reincarnating have a shared purpose or goal or mission in life. It seems that we're always born with those who we need for our growth and those who need us for their evolution. We also choose the major circumstances of our lives before we're born. We will normally choose our parents and where we will be born. We may choose our profession and what we will do with our lives, and even whom we will marry. We do all of this in order to enable us to evolve more fully and to help others to do the same. It would appear that the purpose of life is to grow spiritually and help others to do the same. A very simple and clear purpose. We come to this world to grow and help others to grow. However, although we may choose these very major things for ourselves before we are born, once we actually get here to this physical world, we have complete free will to do as we choose, and we are completely responsible for all that happens to us. In the vast state of life we experience between lifetimes, we have so much more access to knowledge and understanding than we have available during our normal type of consciousness that we experience in physical life. We can actually see very clearly what type of experiences and relationships we will need for our growth. And I feel that some very advanced souls may actually choose very, very difficult lives of hardship or even handicap in order to develop more quickly, or even to help others develop more quickly. When we have so much insight available to us as to what is best for our growth, we may actually choose for ourselves lives that, well, under normal circumstances, we would shrink back from in horror. I think it's a truth to say that great growth can come from painful experience. However, not all growth is accompanied by pain, and we also may choose for ourselves very happy events too. But I think the important point to know here, and this comes from the evidence from the state between lives through hypnotic regression and other methods, we are never forced to do anything that we wish not to. We are never forced to have lives that we would not wish for. In other words, we choose everything for ourselves based on what we need to learn, and we always have access to advice from others who are more evolved than ourselves. So, other than the experiences of people who have died for short periods of time, or people who have been regressed through hypnosis, are there any other ways in which we can investigate what happens when we die? Out-of-body travel. Back in the late 1970s, after the death of my cousin, I started reading as many books as I possibly could find on the subject of what happens when we die. There were very few books available back then. However, there were a very few books devoted to a phenomenon known as astral projection or out-of-body travel. Now, astral projection or out-of-body travel is an ability that some people possess, which enables them to separate their consciousness from their physical body. And I read the experiences of numerous people who claim to be able to leave their physical body and travel anywhere in the physical universe. Now, many people who have fully conscious and self-initiated out-of-body experiences report that they can go anywhere and in any time period, past, present or future. There have been numerous cases where people going out-of-body have visited a distant location and observed a friend or relative and what they were involved in doing at that time. Now, on later checking with that friend or relative, they've actually been able to verify that their comrade was doing exactly what they had observed them doing while they were out-of-body. So, there's a great deal of evidence to suggest that out-of-body travel or astral projection can indeed allow a person to visit and observe events taking place in real life. Now, astral projection can also allow a person to visit and explore non-physical realities, such as the afterlife. In this out-of-body state, we can perceive and communicate with those people who have already died. And as a tool for exploration of the afterlife, astral projection can be a great, great asset. It can enable us to gain access to information and awareness of what happens when we die to a very considerable degree. There are many techniques available to initiate the out-of-body state, and many of those techniques require disciplined and daily practice before we can actually achieve this. For some individuals, going out-of-body is as easy as taking off one's clothes. However, for the vast majority of normal people, it is nowhere as easy as this. To initiate this out-of-body state, it is necessary to deeply relax the body and the mind. Now, although this presentation is not designed to teach one how to leave the body, I can give one basic technique that has assisted many in this endeavour. Now, this technique, if used correctly, can enable us to gain full consciousness from within a dream. Although this may be completely new to the listener, every time we fall asleep and are dreaming, our astral or subtle body is actually separated from our physical body but connected to it through a shining silver-like cord. This happens every time we go to sleep. So often the memories of dreams which we have in the morning are actually the garbled fragments of our out-of-body experiences. This technique for gaining full consciousness while in the dream state is known as lucid dreaming. Now, a lucid dream is a dream in which you know that you're dreaming. And when you know that you're dreaming, you can actually control your dream and whatever you desire in the dreamscape. When you know that you're dreaming and also realize that, of course, you must also be out of body, then you have just opened the doorway to a fully conscious out-of-body experience. There are numerous ways to achieve this awareness during our dream time. One method that can be quite useful to initiate lucid dreaming is if we ask ourselves numerous times during the daytime, "Am I dreaming?" and then looking at our surroundings to check if we are. You might call this a reality check. If we get into the habit of doing this frequently, then a point will come that this question is so embedded in our subconscious that we will actually start asking, "Am I dreaming?" when we are in the dream state itself. Now, when this happens in the dream state, we will also check our surroundings and realize that, yes, indeed, this is a dream. It is at this point that we can gain complete lucidity and travel anywhere we wish. Now, I personally have had a number of out-of-body experiences, most of which were initiated in this manner, and when successfully carried out, this experience bears no relationship whatsoever to fantasy or visions just dreamed up by the dreamer. And each time this has happened to me, I've entered a reality that is at least 100 times more real than the physical world. Colours vibrate in more hues than one can normally imagine or experience in physical life. And each time I felt a rapturous joy unlike anything available in physical life. This is actually a state of consciousness that is unlike anything normally experienced in the physical world. And for me, normal physical life is much more dreamlike than this vast state of consciousness. This state of consciousness is actually the state of consciousness we experience after death. Also, you can be anywhere in the blink of an eyelid, or more precisely, as soon as you think of something, you arrive there. However, I feel it's really important to get as much verification of the reality of our out-of-body experiences as we possibly can. Now, this may come in the form of asking questions to a helper and getting an answer that we can later verify. Now, this must be a question to which we do not know the answer in normal waking consciousness. And I think you may be very surprised indeed what this may yield. Robert Munro and the Munro Institute. Should the listener be interested in pursuing out-of-body experiences, then there are numerous fascinating books on the subject. One author that I particularly recommend is Robert Munro. Now, back in the 1950s, Robert Munro was a very successful businessman who owned a number of radio stations and was very well known in the media world. He was a very down-to-earth, rational person and had no interest or experience in anything esoteric. And spontaneously, one night, he had a very strange dream. At least it seemed to be a dream at first, but it had some unusual exceptions. He found himself floating beside what appeared to be a fountain. And then he realized that the fountain was not really a fountain at all, but what he had thought was a fountain was actually the chandelier light fitting in his bedroom, which had appeared upside down. Now, as he rolled over, he saw his bed beneath him. And to his amazement, he clearly saw his wife in the bed with a man sleeping beside her. Now, his first thought was, how amusing. I wonder who I would dream up in this dream to be in bed with my wife. And then as he looked a little bit closer, he recognized that the figure in the bed was actually himself. Now, this was Bob Munro's first out-of-body experience. And the experience began to recur so often that he thought he must be very seriously ill, perhaps even with a brain tumour. These out-of-body experiences were always preceded by a very strange vibration sensation that would usually begin at the feet and work its way up his body. As he was unable to control these sensations and experiences, he became convinced that he was actually going to die. And as a result, he visited numerous doctors and psychologists and had many tests carried out on him. But all these tests proved nothing out of the ordinary was wrong. Eventually, he was discussing these experiences with a friend, and the friend became very excited and told Robert Munro that what he was actually experiencing sounded very like astral travel. Now, this was an experience that mystics, yogis, and shamans of the East had investigated for thousands of years. He told Bob that only masters, gurus, and other long-trained holy men had the ability to leave their physical bodies temporarily to achieve indescribable mystical insights. Now, Bob certainly did not share his friend's enthusiasm, but finally, he at least had an explanation that at least made some sense. When he realized that these experiences were probably not going to kill him, he decided to experiment and see what use he could put his new talents to. His utterly fascinating voyages of discovery in the non-physical states of existence are documented in his three books, Journeys Out of the Body, Far Journeys, and Ultimate Journey. Now, Robert Munro decided to set up a research organization called the Munro Institute. Now, initially, this organization was dedicated to studying this strange phenomenon that was occurring to him. It was only later that it evolved its scope into a potent research organization for studying and experimenting with human consciousness. In the early years, Bob Munro started observing the effects of sound on different states of consciousness. He discovered that by using the natural phenomenon of binaural beats, he could initiate the out-of-body state in other people. His amazing technology, now known as HemiSync, is today used around the world for exploring unusual states of consciousness, simply using sound. This technology allows anybody to experience profound states of consciousness that, up until this point, were only available to the very few, for instance, those who have been meditating for 40 years or more. The most favored state for initiating out-of-body experiences is the mind-awake, body-asleep state. And using HemiSync technology, this state can be easily reached solely through the use of sound. The Munro Institute is available to almost anyone interested in exploring the non-physical realms and unusual states of consciousness. They teach very interesting programs using their sound technology that enable the participant to explore the afterlife and get verification of the reality of those experiences. Solely using the power of sound, a person without any previous psychic skills can have an experience that can prove to them that they will definitely survive bodily death. One rather interesting program developed by the Munro Institute is entitled the Lifeline Program. Now, this program can enable people to carry out retrievals of people who have died but for one reason or another have become stuck. Now normally when a person dies they go through the experience mentioned earlier from, for instance, Dr. Raymond Moody's research. However, in some certain circumstances a person may actually become stuck after physical death. And this can happen for a variety of reasons, such as a person may die in their sleep and on regaining consciousness in the afterlife may not realize that they're actually dead. And this can be rather confusing when they realize that friends and loved ones who they can see very clearly are completely ignoring them and walking straight past them. Sometimes people become stuck if they've died very suddenly and don't realize they've died, or if they've died in a very traumatic way. Now also, what a person believes during physical life can actually have a very great effect on what that person experiences after death. A person who believes utterly that after death there is nothing but complete blackness, emptiness, and annihilation may actually often experience what appears like a deep sleep or dreamless state. A person who has died and become stuck often has their point of focus turned towards physical reality and earthly life. It is therefore often easier for a physically alive person to make contact with them and move them on to a place that most suits them than it is for a being from a non-physical realm to make contact with them. A person that has become stuck after death may often see people in the physical world going about their daily business. However, it can be very difficult for non-physical helpers to make contact with these people. The person who is stuck may actually perceive these helpers or non-physical entities as ghosts. In the Monroe Institute's Lifeline program, a person can learn how to make contact with someone who has become stuck. They can then introduce this person to a non-physical helper who can then assist the person to move on to their true destination. A map of the afterlife. Robert Monroe not only made many voyages of exploration into the afterlife himself, he also enabled many others to do the same, and his explorer team has gathered extensive information about the layout and territory of the afterlife. Numerous people since those very early days of the Monroe Institute, during the course of their own explorations, have verified that this map is actually correct. Robert Monroe and the Monroe Institute recorded as much information about the various states of consciousness as they could observe and name these different states focus levels. Through mapping these different focus states or levels of consciousness, we are actually in fact mapping the territory of the afterlife. And this map of the afterlife and states of human consciousness is as follows. Bob Monroe named this physical reality, or state of consciousness, as C1, and it contains all that we can see, touch, and feel with the physical senses. It is the physical reality that we all share. He described this level C1 as a circle with us at its center. The next level of consciousness he named Focus 22. Once again, the Monroe Institute describes this level of consciousness as a circle surrounding the previously mentioned C1 level. Now, in Focus 22, we may find the consciousness of those who in physical life are in a coma. Here we can also find the consciousness of those who are under the intoxicating effects of certain types of drugs or alcohol. So when a person is under the influence of, say, hallucinogenic drugs, their consciousness is not fully here in this physical reality of the C1 level. So therefore this Focus 22 is inhabited by those people who are in a coma or those who are very intoxicated. And it is possible for someone experienced in reaching this level of consciousness to actually make contact with those who are comatose. The next level of consciousness which surrounds Focus 22 is known as Focus 23. And Focus 23 is inhabited by people who have already died. However, it's this level of consciousness in which we find those who have become stuck after death. And the inhabitants of Focus 23 are usually in a rather confused state. their consciousness is focused towards the physical world of C1 consciousness, and they can be very saddened and angered by the fact that those in physical life are completely ignoring them, and they may be completely unaware that they've actually died. There may be many attempts by helpers or guides to get the attention of those in Focus 23. Unfortunately, however, those residing in Focus 23 may not even see these helpers, or if they do, they may think that they're actually seeing ghosts. It is therefore often very difficult for those already in the afterlife to make contact with those in Focus 23 and bring them to a better place. It is this level of consciousness that we visit when we do retrievals. As I mentioned earlier, it is much easier for those still physically alive to make contact with individuals stuck in Focus 23 than it is for beings already in the afterlife. For those people who do carry out retrievals, it is their job to make contact with these people stuck in Focus 23. Now, if they can get their attention, then they can actually introduce them to a helper who will be able to assist them move onwards from there. The next state of consciousness surrounding Focus 23 is known as the belief system territories and is made up of sublevels of Focus 24, Focus 25 and Focus 26. It is in these belief system territories that we find groups of people who have been attracted together by their shared beliefs during physical life. Here we will find the heavens of all the major religions. These belief system territories have actually been created by human consciousness and by religious leaders preaching over the centuries about their heavens that their devotees will arrive at after death. Now, belief is an extremely potent thing. What we believe in life has a massive impact on what we will experience after death. A universal law states that like attracts like. Therefore, when we die, unless we get stuck, we will move on to these belief system territories if we have strong religious beliefs. This level of consciousness, or region of the afterlife, is also known as the hollow heavens. People who arrive in these hollow heavens after death live according to what has been taught to them during life as to what to expect in heaven. A person may reside in one of these hollow heavens until a point arrives when they start to notice inconsistencies in the particular doctrines that their religion preaches. Now, at this point, they can no longer resonate with those present in that particular hollow heaven, and they will leave and move onwards to a fuller state of being. Focus 27 is the state of consciousness or afterlife region where most people arrive when they die, unless they have a strong religious belief or have got stuck in Focus 23. Now, the options available to those in Focus 27 are truly vast. Those residing in Focus 27 are involved in many, many activities. Some may choose to help those physically alive as a guide or helper, or even help those stuck in Focus 23 move onwards. In Focus 27, we will also find people who are recuperating from a painful or difficult physical death, attended by doctors and nurses just in the manner they might expect. Sometimes, due to a traumatic death, a person may need a period of recuperation before they can take up their new activities in full. Here in Focus 27, we can also find scientists and technicians working on projects just like here in the physical world, only they have access to vast amounts of information and understanding. At the present time, there are scientists working in Focus 27 who are in communication with those in physical life. Some of these scientists in Focus 27 are actually currently working on projects that will enable two-way communication between those who are physically alive and those who have died using physical life technology, in other words, electronic technology. Now, although this may appear astounding, much progress has been made, and numerous groups around the world have been receiving messages on computers, audio tape, telephone, and even television. Although it may be difficult for the listener to believe that such things are even possible, I promise you that you will hear a lot more about this technology over the next few years. Now, whatever activity we choose on arriving in Focus 27, there usually comes a point where we decide to return to physical life in order to grow more fully, or help others grow, or even bring a wonderful new invention into physical reality. There are also other focus levels, but for the purposes of this presentation, I feel that it is not necessary to cover these at this point. The work of Bruce Mohan. I have another remarkable friend, and his name is Bruce Mohan. And Bruce received his original training from the Monroe Institute and attended many of their programs, including their Lifeline program, which I mentioned earlier. Bruce is the author of 4 wonderful books that I urge the listener to read. These are Voyages into the Unknown, Voyage Beyond Doubt, Voyage into the Afterlife, and Voyage to Curiosity's Father. These 4 books make up the current volumes of the Exploring the Afterlife series. And as their title suggests, these books are the experiences of Bruce Mohan's numerous voyages of discovery into the afterlife. And each one of these books is a fascinating read. It's actually an invaluable handbook of afterlife research. Bruce also gives truly remarkable workshops entitled Exploring the Afterlife, and he claims that he can teach almost anyone to explore the afterlife and get concrete verification that their experiences are actually real. Participants learn how to make contact with those who have died and can help those who have become stuck move onwards. And this is all without the use of hemisync technology, and amazingly, no prior experience or advanced psychic abilities are required, just the ability to imagine. Both my wife and I attended Bruce's amazing workshop in our own home, and I can only say with amazement that he delivers exactly what he promises. Over the weekend, nearly every person who attended the workshop had a significant and clear contact with the deceased relative and got verification that the experience was real. To say that people were flabbergasted is a gross understatement. And we had people attend from Holland, Denmark, England, Italy, and Ireland. And Bruce teaches these incredible abilities in only 2 days. And his workshop includes exercises in breathing, relaxation, placing intent, ability to perceive in non-physical realities, and how to make contact with those who have passed over, amongst many other things. And as Bruce himself says, the doorway to perceiving in non-physical realities is through using the power of our imagination. Normally we may associate our imagination with fantasy, however, this is not always the case. In the non-physical states of existence, anything that we can imagine is immediately created. Therefore, by the correct use of the imagination, we have in our possession an extremely potent means of creation. The same is actually true also in the physical world. Whatever we imagine, if we imagine it clearly enough with lots of emotional force or intent, then at some point in the future we draw into our environment that which we created through our imagination. Belief is also a very potent tool if used in the correct way. It is a reality of life that what we believe strongly about ourselves actually molds our reality. And through using this power of imagination, by visualizing what we need together with a strong intention to bring it into our lives, at some point in the future, what we have imagined will manifest. There are numerous books on the powers of creative visualization available in almost every bookshop. Although this method to create the reality we want in this physical world takes time, in the non-physical realms, what we create with our minds manifests immediately. Many people have heard the expression energy follows thought, and this is quite correct and applies to both physical and non-physical realms of existence. I've mentioned all of this because imagination, being such a creative force, can also enable us to perceive in the non-physical worlds or afterlife. Bruce also teaches techniques to enable verification of the reality of those non-physical experiences. Contact with the deceased using electronic means. Finally, I want to mention about the research and work being done at present for making contact with the deceased using electronic means. As I mentioned earlier, there are numerous groups from around the world conducting these experiments, and for many years now there have been numerous cases where people have discovered on audio tape recordings, ordinary audio tape recordings, voices that were unheard while the recording was being made. These voices convey information of relevance to the person making the recording, and this phenomenon is known as EVP, or electronic voice phenomenon. And thousands of people from around the world have captured these spirit voices on audio tape since the 1940s and 1950s. Now, the technology has come a very long way since these early days of EVP, and during the past few years, some groups have been even receiving television pictures and sound from the afterlife, and this is known as instrumental transcommunication. Probably the easiest method for anyone to record spirit voices is using the old EVP method, by using an ordinary tape recorder, recording the hiss from a radio that is tuned between the stations, an FM radio. Having placed the intent to have a communication, one should speak aloud the question one wants answered. The cassette recorder should be switched on to record the hiss from the radio. This is known as white noise. And after recording this hiss for a period of minutes, the tape can be replayed and listened to very carefully. Now, it may take a number of times before these voices can actually be captured on tape. However, if one's intention is pure and the desire is strong, these spirit voices can often be caught on tape. And this has been the experience of thousands of people around the world for many decades. I would now like to play a remarkable recording of a communication between Mark Macy in the United States and a scientist who is living in the afterlife. These two gentlemen, one alive and the other deceased, have been working together for some years on these ITC, or instrumental transcommunication projects. They have had great success to date. And for anyone wanting more information about Mark Macy's work or his wonderful book Miracles in the Storm, he can be contacted at www.worlditc.org.
Hello? Yes?
I'll try to make it clearer this time. It's a VLF receiving converter.
Okay.
VLF receiving converter. It's a receive radio navigation beacons, and you have standard frequencies shipped ashore and European LW broadcasts.
Yes.
You have also a 1750-meter license-free band, and so on. And you can have a converter. You simply connect the VLF converter to your HF radio's antenna input and a suitable VLF antenna. Then you convert the entire VLF band to say 10 kHz to 500 kHz up to 4010 to 4500 kHz respectively.
Okay. Wonderful.
Technical advice from this side.
Thank you very much, Constantine.
For information on other workshops and presentations available from the Institute for Afterlife Research, please visit our website at www.mikepettigrew.com/afterlife. Thank you for listening to this presentation.